Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including Pam Adams and the Iliopian Oracles. I'm Gary Moore. On today's program,
there are a number of young people, there are a number of Democrats, there are a number of independents, for whom the inaction of the administration towards this issue is a big turnoff. However, what is their alternative? What would have happened had Trump been in office during this time? I dare say it would have been, you know, continue doing what you're doing, Israel. You got to keep these Palestinians in line.
WPMV contributor Kai Ajayi weighs in on the controversial funding for Israel. WPMV contributor Kai Ajayi weighs in on challenges facing the Biden administration, not the least of which, funding for Israel. Let's start on the world stage and talk about funding for Israel. The last time I talked to you, we were talking about how the Israel-Palestinian conflict, this has become a political nightmare, really, for President Biden, as many people in his party, many people who ordinarily would lean in his direction, have some issues with the United States' support for Israel. So Congress just this past week approved billions of dollars in funding for Israel, and some are advising Biden that if he is interested in getting reelected and still holding on to progressives' votes, that he should stipulate for the Jewish state that they do more to stop this indiscriminate bombing of Gaza with these mounting civilian casualties. What are your thoughts?
It's a tough one. Our aid to Israel over the 70 plus years that Israel has been a state is what has allowed Israel to solidify its position in the occupied territories and even expand its reach into the occupied territories. So we have a direct hand in the frustration that Palestinians feel at the loss of land. Israeli military trains our police force here in the U.S. They come over and train our police forces and tactics to keep, to serve and protect, let's put it that way. So there's a symbiotic relationship that's been going on for a long time. And I understand the outrage from the Israeli government at the prospect of restrictions on the use of aid that's sent to the country when there have been none for the last seven decades. They've been allowed to act with impunity, and America has always said, you know, you're our ally in the region, we've got your back, basically no matter what. And it's taken the slaughter of 30,000 plus civilian Palestinians for Americans to say, well, for the American government, let me be clear, to say, well, maybe we should put some restrictions on the way these folks use the bombs and bullets and various other weaponry and money that we send their way. It's unfortunate that it took this level of carnage for American policymakers to start to think about these sort of restrictions, but I support them. I mean, if the state of Israel is going to take money from the U.S. and use it to indiscriminately kill civilians, then I think we have an obligation to stand up and say, well, hold on a second, we need to talk about this.
But that hasn't happened yet. We still don't know whether or not there will be some restrictions. We did hear John Kirby, a spokesman for the Biden White House, say that the United States will be watching carefully to see what Israel does. They've been using vague terms and saying that Israel needs to do more to secure the safety of humanitarian workers and civilians. And I'll tell you, you know, and this is a fine point, but it, yes, the 30,000 plus Palestinians, the carnage, but you'll recall It was directly after those humanitarian workers, the food workers, were killed, that then you had more of the outrage, right?
It's a fine point, but it's an important one. You know, 30,000+ Palestinian lives, and you hear some vague grumblings, but then let some Western aid workers get killed, all of a sudden it's a big brouhaha. You're right, there's somewhat of a double standard there. And to your point also about nothing is necessarily being done, yet when have we heard even these sort of vague requests for additional attention to be paid from the U.S. government to the Israeli government? Before, it's been, yeah, do whatever you want. You have the right to exist, and, you know, you do what you got to do to stay in power, just to continue to exist. The popular view has been, here's this peaceful, democratic Israeli state struggling to stay alive and surrounded by these ferocious Arabs who want to drive them into the sea. And, you know, since the wars of the 1960s, that has not been the case. Israel is the powerhouse on the ground, and they dominate all the other states around them. And they continue to de facto take land away from Palestinians, build on it, even in clear violation of international law. And now we're at a point where, well, oops, our settlement has been here for 20, 30, 40 years. You can't just expect these people to up and move. Forgetting conveniently that there were people there 20, 30, or 40 years ago, and you took their land and built your stuff on it. But it's just, I find it even difficult to talk about. It's just so outrageous.
Yeah. But this is going to hurt Biden politically. You agree?
Oh, absolutely. There are a number of young people. There are a number of Democrats. There are a number of independents for whom the inaction of the administration towards this issue is a big turnoff. However, what is their alternative? What would have happened had Trump been in office during this time? I dare say it would have been, you know, continue doing what you're doing, Israel. You got to keep these Palestinians in line. And that's not attractive to those voters either. So they have a very, very serious choice to make. Do they close their eyes and hold their noses and vote for Biden? Do they not vote at all? I don't think voting for Trump is an option. But if they do anything but option one, i.e. hold your nose and vote, they're basically giving a vote to Trump. And I think that they don't want to see that happen. So in the final analysis, my hope is that of the 100% of those who are offended by the Biden administration's policy towards Israel, that at least half of them will hold their noses and vote for the lesser of the two evils.
Talk to me about the protests on the college campuses, particularly at Columbia, where police were called in and made hundreds of arrests. Those protests are still taking place. Universities are now having to strike a balance between allowing free speech and campus security. You've worked on college campuses. What are your thoughts on that fine line? How much is allowed?
Well, I think the general rule when it comes to free speech is, so long as your speech does not incite people to violence, then you can say what you want. So I could say I hate X group of people, and that's protected free speech. If I say I hate X group of people and let's meet on Tuesday and go kill them, that's problematic. The speech I've heard from the campuses, the most controversial one, I think, is that Zionists don't deserve to live. And if that's somebody's personal opinion, that these people who believe this particular political philosophy, in their opinion, don't deserve to live, okay, could somebody construe that to mean, and therefore we should kill them? I think that's a leap. So I always land on the side of free speech. I mean, if somebody said, you know, after Charlottesville, those Nazis don't deserve to live, I think there would have been a lot of sympathy for that position. I don't think people would have jumped to the conclusion that, and therefore we need to go hunt them down and kill them. But this is such a sensitive topic. When you think back to the Holocaust and all the struggles that people of Jewish descent have had over the centuries, that there's almost a knee-jerk reaction. If you say something that's anti-Zionist or anti-Israel, yeah, you're looked at a little more closely because the Holocaust is still fresh and raw in many people's minds. So one has to be very careful and sensitive to that. Given that, I land firmly on the side of free speech. And so long as you're not calling for any violence, then I think you can say what you want to say.
Colleges
should support that right.
Right. Forgive me, I don't remember the young lady's name, but I want to say there was a valedictorian, a Muslim young lady valedictorian, who was scheduled to be the keynote speaker at a graduation at one of these universities, and they canceled her speech because in anticipation of the speech, they were thinking that it might incite some people and lead to some problems as far as campus security. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was at USC, Asna Tabassum was her name. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, are we so sensitive that we fear the words of a valedictorian because she's a Muslim? And if she says, you know, I stand for the rights of my Muslim brothers and sisters in Israel who are being indiscriminately killed by the Jewish state, okay, she's speaking truth. You know, it's the same sensitivity, this anti-phantom critical race theory that people jump up and down about. You know, when the truth is painful and it exposes injustice, there are those who want to just say, well, let's just forget about that and let's move on. Can't we all just get along? Sometimes, in order to reconcile, you have to first face the truth. We've had this conversation before. We've seen truth and reconciliation panels in Germany. We've seen them in South Africa. We've seen them in Rwanda, Burundi. And notice, it's truth and reconciliation. You've got to have somebody stand up and say, that justice was done. Once they've said that, we can move on to how can we now reconcile and live together moving forward. So long as the pro-Israeli lobby argues that Israel has a right to exist, they were attacked in October, therefore they have to respond. And that's it. And they don't look at any nuance in, you know, 1,500 people killed over here, 30,000 people killed over here, the vast majority of them civilians. If they can't deal with that nuance, then maybe we need to have these truthful discussions and talk about exactly what the facts are. So directly to your point, to your question, USC should not have canceled this woman's speech. Let her speak and have enough security to protect her.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I'm glad you said the last point, because I think the onus is on the university to supply security for the event versus, you know, being preemptive, which some people think was unnecessarily preemptive. All right, we want to remind our listeners, this is Newsmakers on WPNV. Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including Pam Adams and the Iliopian Oracles. We're talking with Kai Ajayi, WPNV contributor in matters regarding foreign affairs and also politics. Let's switch gears and come back home to the United States, talk a little bit about what's happening in Trump world. As you know, this past week, the first president in the history of the United States went on trial in a criminal courtroom. Donald Trump in Manhattan facing charges in the Hush Money case. This is a case where prosecutors allege he falsified his business records to pay porn star Stormy Daniels some hush money leading up to the 2016 election so that she wouldn't talk about a tryst that they were having. On the witness stand this past week, you had the former publisher of the National Enquirer, who admitted that he squashed stories that were unfavorable to Trump. When we look at this trial, in the past, what we've said is that these indictments against Trump, we saw when he was indicted in these four or five cases, how every time they did a poll afterwards, it showed that his numbers went up. Now the polls are not showing that as much. And outside the courtroom, whereas we were thinking that there would be dozens of people, Trump MAGA hat wearers, there have only been about four or five people who have showed up. Do you think now, as we approach him actually being in court, that the power of MAGA is starting to wear off a bit?
I don't know about wear off versus getting exhausted. Maybe it's the same thing. I think the steady flow of damning, incriminating information about Trump generally is beginning to wear on those diehard, even the diehard Trump fans. I mean, he's already been found liable and fined for activities in New York and had to go running around trying to borrow money to pay that. Now it's clear everybody in the country, I don't think there's anybody in the country who, I don't want to use a double negative, everyone in the country, I think, feels to a certain degree of certainty that Trump had a tryst with Ms. Daniels. We all have a certain degree of certainty that Cohen brokered that payment to Ms. Cohen to keep her quiet. Again, we have certainty that Trump knew all this and tried to finagle his way through and make it so that nobody would know. Unfortunately, there are paper trails and, you know, payments made and all of that good stuff. So we can trace back and say, you did the thing. The question to us now is, does the American public care that this man had an affair with this porn star? Do they care enough not to vote for him? I remember a time when an illicit kiss between a presidential candidate and his mistress was enough to completely derail a presidential campaign. Now we've seen all kinds of things happen, and the MAGA folks and the rest of the, I would call them Republican right-wingers, continue to follow this fellow. I'm dumbfounded as to their logic. The only thing I can think of is, you know, he speaks plainly and he speaks the truth, and he doesn't use all this highfalutin language that politicians use. Even though his speeches are, for the most part, word salad, and I like to read them rather than listen to them, and they're just so disjointed. Anyway, I digress. Your question about is his MAGA support waning? I think yes. I think people are tired. I think they might be just waiting for the election. You know, this is all, political gamesmanship by, you know, the deep state that's trying to destroy our guy. So just wait until the election, we'll show you. That's one possibility. The other is that they're actually beginning to be worn down by the truth. There's just so much evidence against the man. And his statements in his own defense have not been particularly helpful. So yes, I do think the MAGA folks are getting weary.
I don't want our listeners to be lost on a phrase you use. You said word salad in reference to Trump. You mean when he speaks, his sentences, his words, his verbiage is kind of scrambled, right?
Exactly. He'll start on one train of thought and go to another and then come back to the original, maybe, and make outlandish statements that are not true. And just the incomplete sentences are the one for me. You know, but anyway, yes, word salad, a complete incomprehensible sequence of sentences that when reviewed leave one puzzled.
Yeah, and I gotta also throw in, Trump sometimes exhibits behavior that suggests early signs of dementia. Even though Biden is the one that people associate with early signs of dementia. You know, Biden is too old. Biden walks slow. Biden talks slow. Biden has had a speech impediment since he was a boy, but it makes it worse because he's older. He's elderly. Trump, because he's firing off words and stuff like that appears to be the fresher of the two, but they are not, what, 3 or 4 years difference in age? And yes, when Trump speaks, it sounds like he doesn't necessarily know what he's talking about. Let me just say this, and you tell me if you agree, because you said you're dumbfounded as to why Republicans still vote for him. You and I have talked some time about this, and here's what I think we came up with, is that the Republicans, the lawmakers in particular who support Trump, fear the base. And by that we mean when, say, Congressman X comes to his home district, leaves Washington and comes back home, and the Trump supporters greet him at the airport or at the American Legion Hall or wherever, and they say, hey, it's a shame what they're doing to our boy Trump. That congressman or woman does not correct them and say, well, you know, he really lost the election. Or, well, you know, he really this, that, or the other. They don't speak the truth to them. They are afraid that if they speak the truth to these Trump supporters, that they won't vote for them. And so they continue the lie. Is that a part of it?
I think that's a part of it for the lawmakers. But my question was more, my dumbfoundedness was related to the rank and file, the citizens and residents of any particular location that support the man, the voters. That's the piece I'm confused about. I understand the calculus of a politician. We've got the MAGA supporters. We've got to keep them on our side if we're going to stay in power. I get that. My question is, why do the MAGA voters vote for the guy? And talking about our old discussions, you'll recall that we had 8 years of Obama, and then all of a sudden there's this swing to Trump. I don't think that's coincidence that the first time we have an African-American president, the next thing we have is a white nationalist. I don't think that's coincidence. I think voters woke up and said, what is going on in this country? Look, the black and brown and poor folk are taking over, and they're going to make this a socialist state. So let's get up off our behinds and go vote. And you have all these folks in the Appalachian Mountains who never voted before, all of a sudden registering to vote and becoming this big, powerful base. So I really do think, you know, if I put my thinking cap on and try to understand where this voting base comes from for Trump, it's from those people who believe politics is a zero-sum game, and if black and brown and poor people gain anything, it means that they, the primarily poor white folks, are going to lose something. So we better rally around ourselves and keep ourselves in power, and this is nothing different from what happened in the 1600s. Right? This is exactly the same sort of give the poor white folk a little bit more than the black folk, and the poor white folk will always line up behind the rich white folk who are screwing everybody. Can I say screwing? Is that okay?
It's okay. So you figured it out.
Yeah, as we are talking it through, it's like, yeah, maybe I'm not quite so dumbfounded after all.
Hey, we're running out of time. Let's talk about this whole Supreme Court hearing the Trump immunity claim. So Trump and his attorneys are arguing before the U.S. Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, that a president has immunity from prosecution. And we've heard at least some of the justices' questions, Sotomayor and Jackson in particular, raising this question to Trump's attorneys. Now, wait a minute. That means a president can order somebody to be killed and wouldn't be immune from prosecution? Now, the Supreme Court is clear that you won't have a verdict on this until after the election. So in that sense, Trump wins because he would like to delay that, right? But what are your thoughts on presidential immunity? I think I already know.
Well, from what I've read of the case so far, it's been interesting because there's been a distinction between those acts taken by the president in the president's official capacity and those that are private. And I read a number of examples that were put to Trump's attorney that related directly to some of the cases against Trump. And the attorney had to agree that the three or four examples that the justices put before him were actually private acts and therefore not subject to presidential immunity. So I'm okay. I mean, if you think about the logic of presidential immunity is presidents have to be free to make decisions while they're president, tough decisions, and not be second-guessing about whether when they're out of office they're going to be prosecuted for those acts. So you talk about killing somebody. If the president orders a drone strike against an American national in a foreign country because they believe that that foreign national is conspiring with terrorists to do our country damage, then that's a presidential act to launch that drone strike against that American individual, and you are immune from that. I think the example you were talking about is if there's a political opponent for the president and the president tells the Secret Service to go take rub the guy out, that is a private act. That's the president acting in a private capacity as an individual running for office who wants to deal with one of their political opponents. So I totally agree with immunity for presidents for presidential acts. I also agree that the vast majority of the issues that Trump is being tried for, election interference, for example, are not presidential acts, but acts of an individual, and therefore he should not be immune from prosecution for those.
But we won't know until after the election.
Correct.
Right. In the little time that we have left, we want to talk about a subject that is near and dear to you, but one that is troublesome. I just got through with the Clean Water Celebration at the Peoria Civic Center with Brian Fox Ellis, in which thousands of Peoria area school children come out for and learn about water in particular, water specifically, but in terms of being better stewards of the planet, talking about things like planting trees and reducing the amount of plastic you use, etc. In the little time that we have left, I always want to hear you give our listeners some advice in terms of taking better care of the planet. Reduce, reuse, and recycle were the three terms that the kids came away with. What are some words that adults can come away with?
I think those three R's are really, really important. Also, look into technology. It can be as simple as winterizing your home so that you don't need to use as much energy to heat or cool your space, so there's not so much coal-fired electricity being used in your space. So there are many organizations locally that assist with weatherization of homes. So it doesn't have to be an out-of-pocket expense. And even if it is, there are tax breaks for energy-efficient upgrades to your home. If you're able to invest in an electric vehicle and or solar and or subscribe to community solar, which doesn't cost anything and can result in a 20% decrease in your electricity bill, all of those things help. But being aware is the first thing, and then doing what you can is very simple as recycle that soda bottle or that can of beans. Recycle it, reuse stuff as you can, and reduce your footprint as much as you can.
And just to add an exclamation point on that and help me and add another one, the reason why we're talking about this is because the planet, and this is not hyperbole, the planet is imperiled. There is a real possibility 100 years from now that cities like Detroit and Miami, well, they say Miami may already be underwater, maybe underwater.
Yeah. This is a, you know, you stated plainly, and I'll bet you there are certain listeners out there who think that it is hyperbole. There is no way that's going to happen. It's the cycle of nature. Human contributions to pollutants is minute, and no, it's all just, you know, the greens and the tree huggers getting you all worked up for nothing. But then we look at weather events, and we look at the temperature, and we look at the melting ice caps, and the evidence just continues to pile up. And unfortunately, we may be too late to avert the 100-year event you're talking about. And unless and until we get really serious about dealing with how we treat our home, there are going to be long-term problems.
Yeah, yeah. Kaya Jai, WPNV contributor. Hey, thanks for being on Newsmakers.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Gary.
Newsmakers is sponsored by the generosity of listeners like you. Newsmakers on WPNV. WPNV, we're Peoria's neighborhood voice.